Hello, everybody. Welcome to Micro Brew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where sometimes you just need to chill the f*** out, man. Those are the words of Jake Bowers during this wild road trip. It's just a crazy road trip. What even was that? They got swept in San Diego. Things were very bad. I would say the panic meter was probably as high as it was all year long. And then they got to Los Angeles. They win 3 out of 4 against the Dodgers. They take the season series. If there is a tiebreaker, the Brewers own it. And that might actually come into play. Logan Henderson was amazing on Sunday. Jacob Isorowski was excellent on Saturday. What a 1-2 punch to close this thing down. And Kurt Hogue, my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, was there to see all of it, all 7 games.
All
West
of it.
Coast, Kurt.
All
West
of it.
Coast, Kurt.
That's right. That's right, baby. From the LBC.
From the LBC. Is that where you are? You're not in the LBC, are you?
No, I am at the LAX Marriott.
That's what I thought. I thought that's where you were, Kurt. I don't know how to describe that in total. I don't think it's even fair to think of this as a full week. These were two very different half weeks where maybe they ran into a really hot team and played some pretty poor baseball, and then managed
the season
to
ended. The season ended.
And thought it was over.
And then the Brewers won the World Series. Now it was the narrative World Series, but hang that banner. Hang the banner.
We love a narrative banner.
That winning the narrative World Series should be held in higher regard than the 2020 wild card appearance. And let me tell you, brother, that thing has a banner hanging at American Family Field. Very funny, by the way, it's bigger than any of the Dodgers like World Series commemorations on their facades. I was like, I spent like 30 seconds at the ballpark the other day looking like. Like, don't they have like big flags flying somewhere? And oh, maybe they do have flags too, but they just have like little circles on the facade with the years. I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Okay,
what Wisconsin football used to be.
A little high school gym energy from when you are, you know, like it's a dominant program. You just have a banner that mentions years. Years we won the division title. I mean, oh, okay, here's 30 different years, you know, like we don't need to make a big deal about making the playoffs in 2020 because, brother, we won the World Series in 2020. That can go up as a little dot with the rest of them, with the rest of the World Series championships in Los Angeles, California. What a fan base, sir. You know, what an opportunity for a fan base to just win all the time, Kurt. World Series champs, though.
Narrative World Series champs. Hang it. Logan Henderson beat Tarek Skubal. The Brewers won the series. Call it right there. That's all. That's all we needed to see. We've seen enough. Pack it up August 16th. Head into the CBA negotiations. Lockout soon.
Oh, that shouldn't be funny. It shouldn't make me laugh to talk about the lockout, but here we are. So the Brewers... This was an important series, and you know, I went into it thinking it wasn't. I think I talked myself into believing that it was something less than what it was, which is an opportunity to say. I was coping. I was coping real bad, but you know, I did the midweek pod live from Nashville, and you know, I think because I was so focused on the Nashville Sounds this week, we'll talk about what I was doing in Nashville, which honestly isn't that like mysterious.
Did it involve hot chicken?
Of course it involved hot chicken, Kurt. Of course. I went to Nashville, followed the Sounds around for a few days, had a really, really good time. And in fact, got some interviews lined up at the end of this podcast. It's not going to be players you think you're hearing from. A couple of the interviews that I just really liked, which is Caleb Bowman and Jacob Herdebees. Those guys are coming up at the end of this podcast. I know you probably have never heard of those guys. You're just going to have to bear with me. They're kind of cool stories. Did have interviews with Brock Wilkin and Luke Adams that ran on the midweek, along with Rick Sweet, their manager. It was just, you know, like, let's hang out with the Sounds, find some stories. We'll be unfurling those as the next week goes on. And while I was in Nashville, the unfurling is a good word. Yeah. While that was going on, the Brewers were losing to the Padres. And honestly, I was kind of too busy to focus on that. So in the midweek, I'm like, you know, I don't feel that bad about it, mainly because I wasn't engaging with the discourse. Like, yeah, those were three real bad losses. I don't know. I gotta wake up, get some hot chicken in my system, and get to First Horizon Park. So I wasn't maybe as focused as I otherwise would have been. But going to LA and showing that you can beat that team. Now, okay, it's not the most calibrated version. They don't have Blake Snell in this series. You know, Shohei Ohtani isn't pitching in this series.
No. I don't want to hear that. No.
Yeah, they beat Skubal.
The one thing I will not stand for is Dodgers diminishing.
That's fair. They beat Skubal. They beat Roki
Yamamoto. Robleski,
who's good,
Skubal.
They beat three of four of those.
I'm sorry. That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Do you think, Kurt, that the Thursday night win, which involved tearing apart Edwin Diaz, who's really struggled coming back from injury, singling five times against him and rallying for three runs to win 5-4, do you think that is the turning point of the season? Do we have any choice but to think of that as the high watermark, the best moment of the season?
Oh, best moment. Probably, maybe the most, it was most important win of the season. I feel like the turning point came earlier.
Oh, you do?
Trying to go back in time, because the Brewers were pretty kind of mid for a while there, right?
Yeah, they're April. They did not get out to a good start, and then May things picked up. You know, there wasn't as obvious a mark. Last year, it was Jackson Chourio's catch against the Twins to save a homer and win a game. I don't think we have a moment like that this year. They just have been dang good.
Yeah, I mean, Logan Henderson's start against the Pirates on a Sunday, or no, it was Kyle Harrison against the Pirates on a Sunday. Feels like it was maybe one of those points, or the Yankees series was
good one.
I think I'm gonna go with the Yankees, Miz against the Yankees.
I think that's right. Friday night, I believe.
And then two straight walk offs. Who won the first? Oh, that was the Jake Bird. Was it Jake Bird? No, it was a lefty. Tim Hill.
Tim Hill game.
Why did he throw it to third?
We'll never know. We'll never know. In the moment, we were screaming at him. We were screaming at an opposing pitcher. What are you doing?
Literally screaming in the press box. No. First. There's one out.
All right, so maybe we don't get turning point, but what we do get is a team that had just lost three games in San Diego. Things were looking bad. Cubs are hot. Braves and Dodgers are coming for that top spot. They are down two runs in the ninth inning, and they rally for a whole bunch of, three runs to surprise the Dodgers. They lose the next night, but then come back with Mizorowski and Henderson and win back-to-back games. Tremendous, tremendous series. And, we've been here, though, last year, of course, famously, they beat the Dodgers all six times. They went 6-0, and then they went 0-4 in the playoffs. So it is obviously difficult to put too much stock into anything that you do against the Los Angeles Dodgers in the regular season. But Kurt, they sure look like a team that can actually win the World Series instead of this slow demising offense that we've kind of been observing over the last few weeks, where you wonder can they actually win a playoff series with this offense? And then then the Dodgers roll over the Dodgers, and you're like, well, maybe. Their pitching is just that good. The offense does just enough. Jake Bowers goes 4-for-4 and reaches five times against all left-handers. And you think, well, they have a superstar like Jake Bowers. Maybe the offense can actually do enough, Kurt. Give me your progress report of the Milwaukee Brewers now that they are through this West Coast trip.
Don't make me do this, because I just wrote this story, JR, where I
JS Online
laid maybe not my guts, but the guts of my brain, which are generally mush, but even more mush when I am asked on this podcast to talk about the Brewers offense.
Is it good? Because once again, is the question.
The scholars will be debating it. For centuries. Was the 2026 Brewers offense good?
I contend they'll only be debating it through the month of October, when we have a little bit more of an answer. Yes.
No, they won't be debating it in October, because the narrative always goes to no.
Yes, that's true.
So we're pre-getting it out of the way. No, like the Brewers, I just need to simplify it. Let's just talk about what they are, what we know they are. This Dodger series was great for that, because they won a game in the ninth inning doing the thing they do, which is like not pressing and putting together a few good at bats in a row against a pitcher who is clearly struggling and has no business closing games, except for the fact that the Dodgers are the Dodgers and they're in such a position in the division that they're like, it's more important for us to get this guy out there and get him right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no reason on Friday night when he loaded the bases, he should have been allowed to face Joey Ortiz.
It was very weird.
They did interview him after the game on the field. He was like the stadium interview.
Really?
And I was like, guys, are they trying to stadium, interview a player into being fixed?
Congratulations. You retired Joey Ortiz with the bases loaded, something everybody did last year, and you managed to survive, not blow a second streak.
Because Tommy Edman made a phenomenal play.
Right.
Anyway, I don't remember my aunt, what we're talking about. Oh yeah. What the Brewers are. look, this is the path. This is the path. It's Miz. It's Henderson. It's Dustin May, who is the second best arm traded at the deadline. That's a take I'm standing on.
He looks good.
It's the bullpen. Abner Ribe should be back. I can't say not a concern there because it's a flexor, and I would never tell you a flexor is nothing, but he's playing catch. Imaging is good. Like, he'll be back shortly.
Terang won't need to go on the injured list. Cooper Pratt should be a minimum stay, things of that nature.
Sal Frelick is coming back. So, like, we saw how it works. I don't need to beat the drum of what happens when you do have the 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position, because it's going to happen. And you don't have guys hitting home runs, because it's going to happen. So they are who we thought they were. And they went 3-4 out west.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good way to put it. It's certainly not the order of operations I would have anticipated.
It's the best 3-4 road trip of all time.
Honestly, you're right. You're right. I mean, to take the season series against the Dodgers, you would, if you were told 3-4, you would absolutely do it this very way. William Contreras, again, strikes me as an interesting topic that we bring up every podcast now, but he hits a homer off his shoe tops on Saturday night, which against Robleski, which ended up looming very large. You know, maybe the at-bats look a little bit better. He's down now seventh in the order. You know, like, we're finally sort of seeing the lineup catch up to the production that you've seen from him, which is certainly below his own standards. And maybe to the point that, you know, you even have to ask the question, is he or Gary Sanchez the better catcher for the home stretch? You know, I think obviously everyone is going to naturally gravitate toward William Contreras' track record in that regard, but it has been really, really rough. Now, you talked to Pat Murphy about that, about maybe just giving the guy a little bit extra rest. Pat Murphy's points, which is fair. He's not going to become a better hitter sitting out. He's got to keep going through the reps. And, you know, if you rely on him, which I think the Brewers do, you got to keep him in there and get him right, I guess. Problem is, he hasn't been right for a long time. And you have to ask the question, is that happening? Is that going to happen? So your thoughts, where you stand now, right? You know, having had that conversation, where you think William Contreras is right now?
Yeah, I thought we were getting pretty close to, like, okay, give him Sunday and then give him Monday, which probably was going to happen because Scooble was pitching, and so you absolutely want him in there. Saturday was big. It was encouraging. Three hard hit balls. You know, he had some, like, Pat Murphy had me look up how many, like, hard hit flyouts he's had this year. And I will say he's run into some bad luck recently, but I don't think overall for the whole scheme of the year, if you look at it, he's been super duper unlucky. But there still should be a lot of talent in there. There should be a lot of offensive capability and punch and, like, ability to walk and drive baseballs. And, like, even though he struggled and didn't show signs of it, there's no reason to believe he can't figure it out at some point over the next 6 weeks. Like, I'm not going to declare him back because he had one good game with three hard hit balls, but the at-bats do look a little better. You don't need him exactly, like, scorching the earth right now, I guess is the phrase, not torching the earth, but nevertheless, you've got time to get this guy right, and you kind of need him to be right. Like, I know Gary Sanchez is there, but I feel the Brewers want to free up Gary Sanchez a little more. They're just trying to find the spots to do it. You know, he's played first base a little bit. Might he see what happens with Christian Yelich? Might he DH? Like, Bo Naylor is going to come up in September.
And you think?
I feel like that's going to happen. And then,
good week for him in the minors, by the way.
Very good week. He saw your face, and that was all he needed.
I did not talk to Bo Naylor, and honestly, regrets.
That was a bag fumbled by you. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the bat the Brewers did acquire at the deadline.
He. Yeah.
And for everyone saying the Brewers didn't trade for anyone in August, buddy, they got John Ornelas.
They sure do. Jiwon Bae, Jonathan Ornelas.
They didn't trade for Jiwon Bae, but
no.
We traded for Ornelas.
Yeah, obviously we'll talk about the randos that the Brewers have been finding to fill some gaps. Oh, I mean,
Lyon Richardson was on the team this week.
he's back in AAA, actually. He actually was there when I was there, and he walked by, and Rick Sweet was like, that's Richardson. And I'm like, who? And he's like, Lion Richardson. He was up with the Brewers. Like, that was him.
There was someone, I knew he was on the roster already, but there was someone out in San Diego, just in the outfield barefoot for half an hour, shirtless too. And the Brewers don't have someone like that. Like, the Brewers have not, I've never seen anyone on the Brewers do that. Some guys on other teams, like, I've seen it happen. Guys have been shirtless in the outfield before. But I've never seen someone on this year's Brewers do it. And I was like, trying to figure out who it was. Like, is that like a very tan DL Hall? And that's what I said about it. I was like, it's a very tan DL Hall.
That was Richardson.
I saw Richardson in the clubhouse, and I was like, it's
so he's a vibes guy. They should bring him back. That's vibes.
Yeah, but Bryce Wilson's also a vibes guy. What's Bryce Wilson if not a vibes guy?
Oh, that's right. I forgot Bryce Wilson is back.
An innings eater. Okay, that's fair.
Yes, you're right. Those lots of vibes guys now. Anyway, William Contreras, you mentioned, I think it is scorched earth that you were looking for there. True story.
I said scorched earth. I got to it. I like torched earth a little more.
I do. True story. The Valparaiso University newspaper shouts to you, known as the Torch, but not on April Fool's Day. Then it becomes the Scorch. So good memes there for your boy here, who was editor-in-chief there his senior year. I know. It was a good time. That's back in...
Multiple
decades have gone by. Let's talk about the
pretty Scott Pesednik.
Yeah, the second baseman that the situation, Ji-Won Bae, and I mean, you got a really good story out of Johnny Rockets, Pat Murphy.
We're talking second base situation? Okay.
Well, Bryce Terang is the second baseman, and he's been dinged up. He did not play in the Dodgers series. It sounds like he'll play on Tuesday. That's great. They added Ji-Won Bae because they suddenly were short on infielders. Andrew Vaughn has played a lot of third base because Joey Ortiz was down. Cooper Pratt is hurt. Ji-Won Bae dropped a ball that might have been a triple play if executed correctly. Now, the throw was a little low. I'm not sure you get the triple play out of that, but you do get at least a double play.
No, they were getting a triple play out of that.
Could have been a triple play.
Maybe not with a throw where it was, but it was a triple play. Off the bat, it was a triple play.
Hard to have a worse sort of range between what could have been and what actually happened than missing out on a triple play and then giving up five runs after that, including a grand slam from Luis Rengifo. And honestly, one of the worst moments of the year, I would say, for Brewers fans.
I would say one of the funniest moments.
It was a little funny if you can rise above. You can appreciate the humor there, I think. Anyway, it wasn't awesome. So he gone. And then now we've got a new guy who unfortunately did not make a couple plays on Sunday that could have potentially ended the game. It did not matter. The Brewers still won 6-2, but some anxious moments. They are in a tough bind with their minor league. I don't imagine, you know, you're going to see, oh gosh, I'm blanking on his name now. Johnny Orleans is what I want to call him. Orleans.
Just call him Johnny Rockets.
Johnny Rockets. I don't think Johnny Rockets is going to be here for much longer. But he did get a hit against Skubal, I will say, at a time when they were really driving up the run.
Contributed to a run.
That's right. So I guess there's that memory will stay with us forever. What are the Brewers going to do with this roster? Like, is it just
a comment on this? Like, what? No, I'm going to.
Well, I guess the broader question is. Is everybody coming back like you think they are? And then if they are, can we just move on, please?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes. Cooper Pratt is going to take some rehabs on Tuesday. Sal is back, if not Tuesday, shortly thereafter. Bryce Terang's not on the IL, but he'll be back in the lineup on Tuesday. So I think that kind of answers that. Like, other stuff happened in San Diego, including the G1, like the Ji-Won Bae triple play drop. Is notable, probably should be talked about, but like Kyle Harrison's like the sinker confidence is not there. He's only thrown it 2% of the time anyway, but we learned that he's like just doesn't feel confident in the sinker yet.
Yeah.
I did talk to him a little today, and he sounded pretty optimistic about like the work they had put in. His arm slot had dropped a little bit. Geronimo Allison. And he like the fastball wasn't zipping because of that. So he feels good about that. And the slurve wasn't necessarily as biting. And that happens as the season goes on. Your arm drops when you get fatigued. So there's that. Like, that was a dud. that was a dud from him, but we've seen him be really good recently as well. And then Dustin May, man. Dustin May's good. Dustin May's really good, especially here.
Yeah, that's working out so far. Two starts in, it's looked really good. Now, May and Henderson both had something similar happen in their starts, those losses, in that they were asked to go probably a little bit deeper than you would have been comfortable because they're rocking this six-man rotation. And it kind of, I feel like it really bit them in the Logan Henderson start early in the week where he was asked to go out for a seventh. He gives up what ended up being the go-ahead home run. Now, it's not his fault that the offense only scored two runs, but still, you know, ideally that's a spot for the bullpen to come in, but because they're short on arms, short on manpower, that's how they have to do it. Dustin May likewise was sent back out, walked a guy, and then was pulled from the game. And that wasn't necessarily the reason that they ended up, that the bullpen faltered there with Aaron Ashby, and you know, the man, a lot went wrong in that game. But it does sound like this process is winding down, which would make sense because you want to be at optimal positioning when you get into the postseason. And it is the type of thing when you know you're going to the playoffs that you probably want to rock as much as possible over the course of the season before really, you know, cycling into a five-man spot. So I think this makes sense, but you don't think that it's a reaction to what we saw in San Diego, is it, that they've announced they're probably going to, you know, Drouin's going to make one more start and then maybe he becomes more of a bullpen guy or a long guy at some point?
Look, I will say the timing is weird.
Oh, you think just it's weird?
You went 17 straight days going 17 days with no off day, going six man, and then you get out of the stretch and like, okay, that was good.
Yeah, you're right. You would think that of all the times it would be, the 17 straight days where we're going to two West Coast trips, that might be the time where we let the bullpen cook a little bit more broadly without.
I do think it's best for Shane Drouin though. Like, I feel like I'm in a similar spot as I was with Chad Patrick at this time last year, where like, I think you can start, but are you like a really good reliever? Are you more valuable to this ball club as their, you know, third to fifth best reliever? But that holds value because we see, you know, when the fifth best reliever is DL Hall, Pat Murphy throws Logan Henderson back out there for the eighth or the seventh, and it, you know, like, he doesn't. If you trust that guy, it changes things. So I feel like for this year, especially, this role is going to fit Shane Drouin better, and he's kind of close to an innings limit anyway. And he's been serviceable as a starter. July, he was pretty good, ate a lot of innings, but and he was good at his Dodger Stadium start was pretty good too, before he walked a couple guys late and Antonio Senzatella. Whoops, bad pitch call, by the way. Pat Murphy did that. Anyway, yeah. I don't remember what I was saying, but the timing was weird. I do see the reason for going six man though, but it did put them in a tricky place where like other pitchers are being overused because you're trying to prevent overusage of other pitchers. But also, like, I don't know how, if Monday's game really would have been different. Like, they played a bunch of close games over the weekend, extra inning games. And they were like, the guys that they were down on Monday probably would have been down anyway because they pitched so much.
Yeah. Well, DL Hall had one really nice outing this week, but also it's time to get those guys some help. You know, like, Chad Patrick looks like he is doing the best he can out there. Aaron Ashby, we know is always overworked. You know, Abner Uribe now is down with this flexor issue. It's time to get some more ammunition in the bullpen. Jojo Romero will be, he'll be activated this week, do you think, when they get back home?
He's got to go rehab first.
Oh, okay. So at least probably another week.
Probably a week. Maybe. I don't know if they need to do back-to-backs, but a week normally is enough time unless you need to get back-to-backs in.
I mean, ultimately, I like this idea. I like the way that it has played out, even though the 17-game stretch, it really did feel... I mean, they went 10-7 on the 17-game stretch. So honestly, they come out smelling like roses, however they handled it, even though, you know, there were some arduous losses in there, because you've got Romero, who's going to be like a guy who's rested for a couple months. Appendectomy, I guess, makes it not so much restful, but you bring him in addition to adding Drouin into the pen. And, you know, maybe you have to sort through another couple guys to make this all work for the course of the season. But I mean, like you said, Chad Patrick showed in the postseason what a weapon he could be as a reliever. You know, Shane Drouin, that's probably his destiny here. So at some point you want to get him in that role because these games aren't going to matter quite as much. You know, obviously you're chasing something. You're chasing that number one seed, at least a first round bye. That's still very important. But
I'd like to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Before I forget, you brought Chad Patrick in the playoffs. Was Chad Patrick's outing in game five the most impactful positive outing by a reliever in Brewers history in the playoffs?
No. Because Brandon Woodruff was a reliever when he homered off of Clayton Kershaw in game one of the NLCS.
No.
I'm sorry.
You went on a technicality.
I mean, I think
he was the bulk guy.
But still a reliever. I do think your picture that you took of Chad Patrick, you took a lot of great photos during that run.
Baby.
It's a sizzling photograph. It's beautiful. I do think that sort of heightens the experience there. But yeah, Chad Patrick was awesome. I mean, he was an absolute dude when he needed to be. The Brewers had some good ones in 2018. You know, and even like, you know, Corbin Burns had a couple of nice outings. I don't remember exactly the context of all of them.
But like the series was, I thought the series was over when he came in the game. I was like, well, that was a good season. Aaron Ashby just, you know, put a couple guys on. Oh boy. One run game, I think.
Yeah. Maybe. I also loved, this is not a reliever per se, but it is Trevor McGill opening, you know, that first crazy inning in game five. That was quite an electric moment. It doesn't really have a lot of, in terms of stakes and WPA involved, but that was fun. Before we get to three up, three down, couple more things I want to touch on. How are we feeling about Jacob Mizorowski? He is still getting incredible results. He looks good. He's still throwing triple digits. It seems like all is well. I know we've spoken in the past, probably not on the podcast, but just in general, like kind of not seeing him quite get back up to full capacity since he had that long layoff over the All-Star break. Like maybe he was nursing a little bit of something and now I don't know if I feel like he's all the way back, and maybe that's just nitpicking and crazy because he obviously just had a really nice outing against the Los Angeles Dodgers. But do you feel like he is all the way back, or there is still some lingering doubt about everything?
Nope.
You think he's all the way back?
Nope.
You saw what you needed to see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, held his velocity.
He did. All right. That's great.
Held his velocity. Okay. Yeah. Move on.
Let's talk about Jake Bowers. Jake Bowers. My goodness. My goodness, he is now the unofficial Zen spokesman of the clubhouse after his incredible one-liner about, you know, just needing to chill with an expletive, love an expletive, well-placed expletive. He also went 4-for-4 on Sunday against Tarik Skubal and other lefties and then walked a fifth time. He had so many important moments in this. I can't believe it. I can't believe Jake Bowers. Like, this was it's gone from curiosity to... Is he their best offensive player? I think it's completely defensible to say that he is their best offensive player. This is a man who anybody could have had. He was just straight up available a couple years ago, just in the wind. And the Brewers were like, you know what? Come on back. No one else is giving any big contract, minor league deal.
Made the team.
Amazing stuff. I mean, that's like, you know, Nelson Cruz is one of the famous examples. Everyone blames the Brewers for trading Nelson Cruz. Fair, but like he was released by the Rangers and anyone could have had him. And the Rangers are like, fine, we'll bring him back. And then, of course, he becomes a superstar for many, many years after that. I don't know if Jake Bowers' trajectory is quite that, but oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. He's so good. And Kurt, I think he's going to leave this team this offseason and get paid handsomely somewhere that is not Milwaukee. I would be willing for you to tell me that I'm wrong on that front.
I think you are wrong. No, I'm just kidding. You're right.
Of course I am.
There's a world in which it happens because it's like a good fit on both ends, but I just don't see it being the realistic world. Like, this guy should get paid. This is his one chance to get paid. He's not been really operating on like big salaries. He's been kicked around a bunch. He's having a 140? What is it? WRC plus, like 140?
I don't even know. Yeah.
And in an utterly insane season, he gives you positional versatility a little bit. He should absolutely cash in the most he can. And we know the Brewers are not the team that is going to pay the 32-year-old first baseman 2 years and 32. Oh, wait, what's that? Hold on. I'm hearing.
Oh, someone's in your ear.
I'm hearing they did do that.
Did they now?
Well, it didn't work out. So Probably not. I'll never say no to. I won't rule this one out. But he's been incredible, and he's like super important to the team in so many ways.
You know, my son pointed out that Brandon Lockridge looks like Rhys Hoskins. That was the reference, of course, Rhys Hoskins, when kind of standing in the box. And I looked up at the TV and I immediately saw it, which I'd never thought about that. But there's just a little bit of resemblance when you're looking at him profile in the box. Is Brandon Lockridge the guy who's definitely leaving this team when Sal Frelick comes back? I know they're not like committing to when Sal Frelick is going to come back. He has been playing right field at least Sunday, I think Saturday as well, at AAA. So he had been DHing before that. He's throwing the ball. He's been with Nashville for a little while at this point, about 10 days. So I guess it's logical that Brandon Lockridge is the guy as the odd man out, but I don't know if they'd get more creative than that. Would they dare send Luis Lara back to AAA? Like what do you think happens there?
It's probably Lockridge. He just looks like he needs more at bats.
Yeah. He played on Sunday and I do feel like he needs more at bats. He's going to help them. Like his wheels, his defense, like he's going to help them. By the way, Jake Bauer's on defense in right field. He's not bad. He started the year, it was really wobbly. And now I guess I haven't thought about it in a while. You see him out there. He's very casual out there. I think he's like legit could play right field. I don't think it's just a let's get his bat in the lineup anymore. I think he's a fine right fielder.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. I mean, he's not as good as Frelick, but
I found something I said on February 10th, 2025. I said, I don't think enough people are preparing themselves for the likelihood of Jake Bauer's on the opening day roster.
Oh, remember when that was actually controversial on February 10th?
Yeah, people were like, no. That was last year.
Oh, that's right.
2025, when he was on a minor league deal. Yeah, this year, I think he was locked in.
I do recall that. I remember being like, seriously, that's what they're left with? They absolutely refuse to upgrade. They've just refused to upgrade at the corner.
This is the one situation in which...
That has paid off.
It really paid off. Joey Ortiz has been good for the last month, but it's not like they have a world beater on the left side.
Joey Ortiz, I really thought he was coming through bases loaded against Edwin Diaz Friday night.
Was that a two-run game or a...
It was 3-1. It was a two-run game. Oh, I thought that hit was coming. I believe.
I didn't believe because I thought he was going to walk. And then they would bring in whoever the heck was warm. Someone was warming up. And then that guy would get the out. I did not restart rewriting my game run on Friday. But that did bite me on Thursday, JR. It did bite me on Thursday. I didn't have any words down for Brewers win until it was 4-4. And even then I was like, all right, he was like a sentence. And then Bauer's got the hit and I was like, well.
I couldn't believe it. I actually fell asleep. Like again, I'm in Nashville, busy. It's late night, 4-2. When Muncy hits the homer to go up 4-2, I absolutely checked out of the game. Literally managed to do that. Not easy for me to do, but it was like, well, they're just not going to score. They haven't been scoring. And then happened to wake up in the ninth when they had already plated one. It was 4-3 at that point. I could not believe that they kept adding on. I could not believe it. Although I also couldn't believe that Edwin Diaz was still pitching. intriguing decisions were made. All right, let's go into some of the more granular details from the week. It's what we do every week on this here podcast on Microbrew. It's 3 Up, 3 Down. Kurt, can we talk a little more about Luis Rengifo?
No, yes. I wasn't sure if you were going to go first or if I was going to go first, but I was like, I was literally just thinking, we did talk about it.
We need to say more. Can you believe it? Luis Rengifo hits a grand slam because of course he did. No.
Can I, in full transparency, I decided against it because it was such a good win for the Brewers today. But I was this close until, you know, you always post the final score of the game you cover. And then I always say like a little sentence describing it. I almost said Brewers 6, Dodgers 2. Luis Rengifo hit a grand slam against the Brewers 5 days ago. I was like, no, this was the narrative World Series. I can't.
No, yeah, we can't play around. But that was... spectacular in a way. Like Kyle Harrison's pitching, he's struggling, you figure, oh no, even with the bases loaded, I'm not thinking grand slam, I'm thinking, oh, he has a chance to like get a single and really burn this team, because Luis Rengifo hitting much, much better in San Diego than he was at Milwaukee when he was borderline unplayable. Homered again today.
Not borderline unplayable. He was unplayable.
He was unplayable. It was a disaster. And this reminds me of the Jonathan Scope situation. Oh, actually, I'm going to bring that up in Remember When a little bit. He's a minor character in Remember When. You know, where he was just so bad, so unbelievably bad. And then they moved on from him as they should have. And then the next season begins and he is good. He is a good baseball player, good contributor. Ringifo, the Padres are the hottest team in baseball. Everything is going right for them lately. And they have put themselves firmly in the playoff spot. I really do think the Padres were just like the wrong team to face in that moment. And even then the Brewers should have won 2 out of 3 or at least 1 out of 3. So, I cannot believe Luis Ringifo got up for a grand slam. Kyle Harrison, of all people, too. Like, one of their top pitchers. I can't believe it.
Can we just go over everything? We don't even have to spend too much time on it. But everything that went wrong in the late innings on Wednesday in San Diego?
Yes. So much. Okay. This is post-Luis Ringifo. This is the game after Luis Ringifo. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the big one is Ashby didn't cover first base.
Right. Well, the other big one is Chad Patrick walked Luis Ringifo.
Oh, that's right.
And
that's
then right. Aaron Ashby didn't cover first base, but he did. He just like got beat.
Yep.
I thought live Jake Bauer's could have taken it, but as soon as you hesitate. Pat Murphy had some interesting comments about that after the game where he was just like, it's Aaron Ashby. The first baseman just got to take the ball. It's like, dang.
Well, I mean, also, like when we say pitcher doesn't cover first base, I think in our heads, old school baseball in your head, it's like, well, you just got lazy and he wasn't thinking about it. Like it's a split second, you know, like he just leaves the wrong way for a second.
He wasn't like, he didn't forget.
No, he leaned a little too far the wrong way.
He was just a tiny bit too slow on that first step over. And then by that point,
it's already too late.
Cronenworth beat him. Happened, and then I don't know if this is going wrong, but the Brewers like threatened against Mason Miller, did nothing with it.
I mean, Antonio Sensatella has really struggled. Luis Campuzano can't be the guy who beats you for a walk-off win, I don't think.
Yeah, Bryce Turang getting caught stealing third base. Gary Sanchez leadoff double moves to third, first and third, nobody out. You don't score any more runs.
I think I stopped updating this going into Saturday, but at some point, I think it was after Friday's game, the Brewers had stolen 11 bases in August and gotten caught 10 times.
Yeah. G1 base stole one late.
Yeah.
I think off of Edwin Diaz, but that was, I don't know if they had any more this weekend.
Yeah. I don't think that would have been like yesterday and Saturday and Sunday. I mean, that's crazy stuff. And maybe you just chalk that up to the 17-17 and the tired team.
Yeah, maybe.
But like, what is going on that the stolen base rate is 50% or slightly above? I mean, that's brutal.
Well, Turang was out because, newsflash, his knee hurts.
Yeah.
He was trying to steal third base. I don't know if the sign, there might have been a sign on for it. Not certain about that, though, so it's not gospel.
Yeah.
But he should not have been. Dude, all right,
do you want to? Is this your number one? All the things that went wrong. I just want.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Do we have more? There's more, probably more in there somewhere.
Gary Sanchez couldn't get the tag fast enough.
Oh my gosh! Plays at the plate killed this team. I mean, it didn't actually because I think they won the game where William Contreras drops the ball at the plate, right, against the Dodgers, or maybe not.
That was Drouin. So yes,
so they won that game.
Great throw from Churio, by the way. Oh,
amazing.
Oh. Can I make my number two now?
Yeah, go ahead. You're going to skip me in line, but go ahead.
I don't even know if this is three up, three down. Jackson Churio's a good defensive outfielder now.
When did that happen? That is a change.
I don't know, but I keep looking up, and this man is, I didn't think the Freddie Freeman play on Saturday's game, which Statcast had at 15% probability. I like knew it was a good play live, but I looked up and I said, well, great defensive positioning there, because I looked up and by the time I tracked the ball and tracked Churio, he's like full speed, got it, and he made the play easy. So
that's right.
His jumps, his reads are getting really good on the ball. He's running pretty well out there. That's my number two, Jackson Churio, good defensive outfielder now.
He'll did not realize
bungle like three plays now.
That's true. I did not realize watching that game live that the play was even that exotic. I thought it was in foul ground at first. I did not realize that it was nearly as stellar as it was. Saved a run in a game where it could have made a huge, huge difference on the outcome of that game. Just really good stuff. That throw home will not get noticed because William Contreras straight dropped the ball, but like that was a seed. I mean, he should have been out easily.
Didn't think they had a chance on that.
Right. And made it like a no brainer. If he catches the ball, it is a clear cut out. It would have been huge. Yeah. Jackson Churio. Things are good in the Brewers outfield. Defense is always right now. Just really been good. Luis Lara, I think, had a leaping catch again. To save the game briefly. I never really know if Luis Lara makes those plays because he like gets twisted around in his
route. This one was crazy good. This one was crazy good. Yeah. He was on it right away.
Yeah. Okay. What's my number two? You know what? Speaking of defense, let's just do more defense. You know, I love it when big people who are out of position make good plays. And I mean, Andrew Vaughn doesn't really count as a truly big person, but like he made an unbelievable play at third base, a stop that was coming down the line. He throws across. It's a bad throw. Gary Sanchez scoops it out. Gary Sanchez at first base an excellent scoop. He's not a good first baseman, but that was an amazing play. And Andrew Vaughn at third base, adventurous. It's interesting. It's maybe not something you want to go too long with, but amazing stuff on that one play, that one moment in time where the two players, I mean, you forget that these guys are just tremendous athletes and they're going to make plays every once in a while, even if they're wildly out of position. That was a amazing play for two guys who are wildly out of position.
I told Vaughn, he had like to run pretty far for three fly balls in that game too.
Yeah.
I told him after that they were asking for his address to send the Gold Glove to.
Oh yeah.
And he said he told Miz, like, he was like, "What? I thought you were a strikeout pitcher."
He did not strike out that many people in that game.
No, the Dodgers were theme of the series, man. Dodgers were on fastballs.
That's true. Now he did strike out two people in a really high profile position. Maybe that's your number three. If not, it'll be a tease for mine.
I'll go a different way on mine. Let's see. We talked about Dustin May. Gary Sanchez pitched, and while doing so, William Contreras almost had a wrist injury because Austin Hayes swung and missed so violently that he hit Contreras on the backswing. Gary Sanchez is like kind of becoming a gem of this team. I don't know if enough people realize that. Pat Murphy said he pulled him. Someone like asked if he was okay after Saturday's game. He got hit by a pitch and then left. Murphy pulled him and then said it was because he went out to first base with a shin guard still on. He thought that was a bad sign.
Okay.
And then Gary, he said that Gary told him he was still good to pitch tomorrow. So I don't know, man. Gary Sanchez, obviously he had a good week at the plate too. I really like how he's called some of the games too. I wrote about a couple of sequences in Logan Henderson's start today that were not pretty spot on. I thought he worked he was catcher for Dustin May's start. I thought that was a great mix too. So yeah, Gary Sanchez appreciation hour.
Yeah, he's a very good pitch caller. He kind of reminds me facially of the character in Ted Lasso, the really intense guy on the team who kind of was a smaller bit player the first season and then became a bigger story. Gosh, why can't I think of that character's name? He was kind of the captain of the team, just kind of very angry, very
Roy Kent.
No, not him. I don't know.
I haven't watched since the first season, so
yeah, fair enough.
It's totally out of my mind.
It's definitely not. I mean, it's a fine show. There's nothing wrong with it. I just like, I'm not craving it. But anyway, he kind of looks like that guy who's very intense. And I think that's why I think of Gary Sanchez as very deeply intense. You don't really like, I don't know. You just don't see a lot from him, but I think he is much more chill than anybody realizes. I think he's really probably a pretty, pretty good guy to have around. I mean, there's a reason they brought him back. You know, I'm sure that he's also a very credible backup catcher, but I think they really liked him. And I think they like him now. I think he's good people.
So, I think they like him more now. I think like year two, Gary has grown on the Brewers a lot more than year one Gary did. Yeah. That's just the vibe I get from being in the room, as Grant Bills would say, an established clubhouse presence.
Yes, that's true. All right, my number three. I said it already. Jacob Isorowski was in trouble against the Dodgers Saturday night. He had loaded the bases with nobody out. No, one out. That's not true. One out. And Shohei Ohtani was due up. Shohei Ohtani struck out. That brought up Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman struck out. Some nasty, nasty work from Jacob Mizrowski on a night when we just said the strikeout wasn't really there. This wasn't one of his bulk strikeout nights. And he obliterated their two great left-handed hitters at the top of the lineup. Shohei Ohtani, I would say, largely mitigated in this series by the Milwaukee Brewers. Obviously, he did have a two-out triple that was a little damaging against Mizrowski, but still, like, they did a great job against him. And, you know, maybe the knee pain is playing into it. I know you don't want to mitigate the Dodgers. You don't want to do any of that caveating. Nope,
they're the Dodgers.
Brewers did a great job.
They don't get caveats.
Against Freeman, too. Freeman didn't do anything. Their offense in general didn't do anything.
That sequence was
filthy. It was amazing.
Phenomenal. Did you see what Ohtani did at 0-2?
I don't. Well, I saw that he swung and missed, yes.
Well, I don't know if you're watching as closely, intently on the broadcast. It was a big moment, so maybe the broadcast didn't show it. I don't know. I
was at State Fair. I was not watching that intently.
Yeah. So you definitely didn't see this.
I didn't know.
Let me tell you about it. So he goes slider. It's not calling it a curveball. On Baseball Savant, but like William Contreras went out and said, we're going to throw a slider. So I think it was a slider. Go slider for pitch one, called strike. Like that was the perfect pitch in that spot. They were looking heat. Comes back, freezes him with a comeback four seamer that catches the front end. And Ohtani is like, he starts to bail a little bit. Like he doesn't really love being pitched inside. You see him bail sometimes.
Yeah.
And so they got him there. And then he takes a timeout and he steps out and he kind of is just like looking. And I turned to Adam and I was like, oh, he's got him. You can throw whatever you want.
He did not know what to care.
He has no idea what's coming next. And even if he's looking fastball, which he probably is because it's Miz. And Miz the day before had said in the media, he knows what I'm throwing. I know he knows what I'm throwing. It's going to be a fastball. And it's Miz. He's going to throw a fastball. And then he dots the slider in the same spot. Diabolically good sequence, I thought.
Yeah. All right, that'll do it for three up, three down. What didn't we talk about? On Monday, William Contreras having a little fun with Padres catcher Freddie Fermin on an ABS challenge. Held the bat in front of Fermin's eyes so he couldn't see whether the call was correct or not. Just a moment of levity from William. Christian Yelich hit a bomb on Monday night. And he hit the ball really hard this week. He didn't play on Sunday, but like he looks a little better if you want to have a little bit of hope in what you see from Christian Yelich this year. He is getting some terrible luck. He's hitting balls right at people. Had some screamers that were caught. So maybe there's a little bit of corner turning. We can possibly
hope there. There's going to be a left field home run on this homestand.
Oh, you can feel it. You see. Yeah, I see. That's right. Aaron Ashby, we mentioned, didn't cover first. Well, let me tell you, the next time he had a chance to go cover first, that man sprinted over there. Very, very funny moment on Saturday night. And then Logan Henderson sprints over there on Sunday to get the last out of an inning. He was fired up. That was that's the thing now. Guys are not missing that run over to first base. Brewers, of course, in 2024 with you all Piamps have been burned before. Oof. By a pitcher not covering first base. So no one wants to see that relived. No. Garrett Mitchell had a couple diving catches, saved the game on Wednesday for a hot second there before things fell apart in extra innings. Antonio Sensatella, reliever curse relived. I don't think we quite had the data to support that. He had a good outing on Saturday, but
not great.
It's been not great. Not great so far. I mentioned Dustin May has been really, really good. And I think that's it. That's what we got. All right, let's go back in time. You know you love this segment. It's Brewers history, baby. It's Remember When.
It's my yawn. Sorry. Actually, it was just a general yawn.
Yes. Thank you, Kurt. Let's revisit a moment in 2018. The Brewers, this is just I wouldn't say a very highly memorable moment, but a regular season opportunity for the Brewers in late July and early August of 2018, which just so happens to be the time after Manny Machado has been traded from the Orioles to the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Brewers were in on Manny Machado. Reporting indicated that they were, you know, probably the runner-up to get the services of Manny Machado. And then they had to face him right away. Now, this, of course, ties in nicely with what the Brewers had to do on Sunday, which is face and defeat Tarik Skubal, who, of course, was linked to the Brewers, that there was a package on the table where the Tigers could have potentially dealt him to the Brewers instead of the Dodgers. And again, as history repeats here in 2018, the Brewers end up seeing him in very short order after the trade deadline, a couple weeks in this case. The Brewers went to Los Angeles again for a four-game series in 2018. It's actually the last time they played a four-game series before this run here in 2026 in Dodger Stadium. And it went well, not quite as well as this one, but they did win the first two games of the series, and that enabled them to feel pretty good about where they stood against a team that, of course, was regarded as one of the better teams in the National League. The Brewers, by the way, after missing on Manny Machado, went ahead and got his teammate from the Baltimore Orioles. That's Jonathan Scope. Did not work out as well as it did for the Dodgers. Eric Thames almost hit a grand slam in game one of that series. It went foul. Then he hit a three-run homer later in the game. Then there was a power outage, a real power outage in Dodger Stadium. The scoreboard went dark. Lights went out. 23-minute delay. And they got back on the horse. But the Brewers ended up winning that game 5-2. Game two of the series, the Brewers win again, 1-0. It is Wade Miley season. Wade Miley, 7 scoreless innings. Lorenzo Cain pulls back a Manny Machado home run. And it's Lorenzo Cain again who hits the RBI double that scores the one run the Brewers have. That is a third inning hit. Christian Yelich actually had hustled for a two-out single and then scores, comes around to score on the double in the third inning. So that is the one run. Wade Miley takes it from there. Of course, it was Cody Bellinger who had hit the shot that would have been a homer that Lorenzo Cain stole, not Manny Machado. My bad. Also, Lorenzo Cain later in that inning tried scoring on a Mike Moustakas single. Kike Hernandez threw him out at home. Very exciting stuff. But the Brewers win the first two games of that series. They dropped the next two. It did not go well. There was a walk-off loss.
Who got the save in the game in the second game? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, I think you know, Corey Knebel, your boy.
Big smile on my face. Well, because 2018, he wasn't the closer for.
I believe most of the year. By that point in the year, though, wasn't he? Like, he definitely was at the end. And I feel like I should know this and I don't. At some point, it became.
Well, he was the reliever of the month in September, I believe.
Okay. And I mean, Jeffress definitely was closing games. Like in the Rocky series, he blows the save where the Brewers then come back on Moustakas' walk-off single in the 10th. So
he closed out. He did not get a save in that series. He did pitch twice in the ninth inning, closed out one game. That was a 4-run game.
Oh, you're saying Knebel did not get a save in the series that I'm talking about. Man, I don't know which I was looking at. That was Knebel. I must have been looking at other games, but
he wasn't the closer by that point. It was Jeffress still.
But he's closer in game one against the Dodgers in the NLCS because he had Stranden winning at third base.
He was lights out because the best pitching he ever did was September 2018 through October 2018. Corey Knebel's PR logging off. Continue.
Of course, the Brewers played the Dodgers one more time. That was unfortunately in the NLCS. It goes to 7 games. You know how it ends. Sad. Will the Brewers see Tarek Skubal again in the NLCS or otherwise in the postseason this year? Time will tell. But that is our look back at Brewers history. Now, Kurt, let's close this puppy down the way that we do every week, and it is with your take of the week. Here it is, Kurt Blanche.
You have never accidentally segged me right into the next segment better than you just did. I'm astounded at.
Are we going to talk about more Corey Knebel?
At how you just did that.
Oh. Okay.
I don't think the Dodgers make the NLCS.
Oh, saucy.
I would have told you that before the series too, but I guess, I'm not really basing it off of 4 games. What do you think? I am an idiot? Yes. But am I stupid? No.
One of your best takes of the week, honestly, because we've been doing like sort of offbeat stuff. This is a real honest to God.
Yeah, no, I'm back into it. Yeah.
Let's go.
It's not so much based on anything I saw this week as just like a gut feel about the game and the sport of baseball and how hard it is to do what they did 2 years in a row and how hard it is for the game of baseball to let you do what they did 2 years in a row. Like there's some teams in the National League that are not to be messed with. This is the American League. This is not the junior circuit, right, where you can just piddle paddle and be 500 under 500 in a playoff spot. No, we don't do that over here. We don't do that over here. Real ball clubs are going to be in this postseason, and I just don't think the Dodgers make the NLCS. I know their starting pitching is. When I put it all together, it's a freaking transformer. It's a behemoth.
It's divine.
But the rest of the team is kind of like a Cybertruck. Okay, that's not entirely true. They have Shohei Ohtani. Like, but there's just enough enough like logical reasons where I could see them losing early, and then I add in the fact of like, this is baseball, man. Stuff happens. Like, let's not. Like, for my entire life, we've talked about how random the playoffs are, and the Dodgers winning two World Series in a row are just gonna make us one of which they like had every lucky break possibly go their way in Game Seven. Like, let's not just forget about how that goes. Now they're still the Dodgers. Like, they should be the favorites if we're, you know, making betting lines or whatever. They should be the favorites. They're the Dodgers. They're the best team. I just don't know this year, man. I don't know. Something in my gut tells me that it's not gonna happen.
I think it's important to recognize that last year the Dodgers had incredible injury luck, actually, in that none of the guys who'd been hurt over the course of the year were down for the count by October. I mean, obviously, Blake Snell was great. Tyler Glasnow was great. You know, Ohtani and Yamamoto were solid.
Is Glasnow back or is he close?
I think he's just close.
Yeah. Well, the thing is they clearly do the thing where they don't push their guys, but like...
Of course.
And it's fine. Like, they make sense. This is why Edwin Diaz is closing games. They don't care.
They can mess around.
Yeah. I don't know about Shohei. Shohei going to pitch? I'm not going to rule it out because he's Shohei.
Well, and I mean, his numbers are not otherworldly this year. Now, they're really, really, really good.
Hitting, he is a step. I feel like he's been a step worse this year than the last.
I mean, he had 55 homers last year.
Yeah, I don't know his homer total is at. And he still like hits the absolute crap out of the ball. And in the playoffs, he was bad for three games against the Brewers and then played the greatest baseball game of all time. So
yeah. I don't want to like even suggest that he's even remotely bad. He's not at all.
Yeah, he's second in MVP voting.
Yeah, of course he is. I could see this going south. Like, Skubal has had three starts and they've been all solid. They've been solid.
Okay.
But has he had a Cy Young start yet? No. I mean, like, you could, you know, like, is he fully healthy? Probably close enough. I don't know. I could see the injury luck swinging a different direction this year and having a really big impact on what happens when they get to October. I could see that.
Yeah. I'm just not going to crown them. And I'm going to pick against them this year, not because I don't think they're the best team, but because sometimes we need to remember that this is baseball.
Baseball, always baseballs. And you can
unfortunately for the Brewers, it has never baseballed for the Brewers.
Baseball, always baseball, with a caveat. You still got to be a little bit rich.
caveat, do you hit home run?
Please.
Like one, singular.
Yes. If you are the 1982 St. Louis Cardinals, congrats, you can still win the World Series. Anybody else? No, you need to hit homers. There was a Giants team in there that didn't hit homers, but like, come on.
Yeah, but they were the Giants.
They need to hit homers. They're not going to.
What if the Brewers, can you like change your dimensions to your ballpark midseason? They should have done that going into this season. I know it's easy to bring the fences in, but what if we put the fences, push them back? Patio area, gone. Bullpen. Sorry, you're on the field now. Friday's front row or whatever it is now, the barrel yard. Yeah, you're gone.
But we got tickets to that party area. Sorry, you could stand in the warning track, but you're in play.
suddenly the Loge bleachers are now the closest bleachers you can get.
Was it the Polo Grounds that had just unbelievably deep dimensions, or Ebbets Field? I don't remember which one.
Polo Grounds in center, yeah, but left field, I believe, was like 200.
Yeah.
And then it just goes straight out. Yeah, Polo Ground this thing. Except for, the Brewers will hit all their homers to the opposite field, except Jake Bowers. So find like a little, like Toyota territory can stay, because that's where the Brewers hit all their homers.
Except in the playoffs last year, where they started pulling a whole bunch of home runs. It was a very different.
Makes you think.
It's weird. I am all on board the idea of changing the dimensions of the stadium, because this is a couple years in a row where they've done the no home run thing. So like, let's lean into it. Let's push some fences back. We need those fences back.
If you're just going to hit ground balls, fine. Then everything the other team hits is getting caught.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I'm not making a conspiracy, by the way. I was just being funny.
Amazing outfield defense, guys who can't hit home runs. I see where this is going, and I love it. Okay, that's going to do it for this edition of Micro Brew. The Milwaukee Brewers have the best record in baseball. They're the best team in baseball right now, and they're coming home. Seattle Mariners to start the week. is it Braves again on this homestand?
Yeah, then Williamsport. Yep,
that's right. They're going to close the week in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, the Little League Classic. We almost had a Wisconsin team getting to the Little League World Series for the first time ever. Whitefish Bay has been knocking on the door. They lost in walk-off fashion to a team from Iowa. They're not going to the Little League World Series. They will get there someday. Whitefish Bay is just too good a program right now. They're gonna break through. But it's
they are the Milwaukee Brewers.
They are. The Brewers will not get to play for a Wisconsin team, but they will lose a home game this year. That's a home game against the Braves on Sunday in Williamsport. That should be super fun. So our colleague Todd Rosiak is going to go out there. We will be back to discuss it next week at this time. Kurt, thank you for joining me, my friend. Always appreciate it.
Now, good night.
Let's do some interviews. Jacob Herdebees, why is he interesting? You may ask. He's he's fast. That's not really the reason. He is committed to the U.S. military. He went to West Point. He played baseball at Army, where he set records for runs scored, stolen bases, and he has a military commitment, a 5-year military commitment waiting for him as soon as baseball is over. As long as he's under professional contract, he doesn't have to go into the military. As of right now, he's just stealing bases for the Nashville Sounds. I enjoyed talking to him and thought I would share that interview. And then Caleb Bowman, who is a journeyman. He's 29 years old. He's not a prospect. Neither of these guys are prospects per se. But Caleb Bowman has a really crazy baseball journey. He has played baseball on 3 continents. His goal is to maybe even get to a 4th one before the Brewers came calling. I really enjoyed talking to him too. So some guys you probably don't know a lot about, haven't been following very much. This is all part of my series, which you will be seeing at jsonline.com this week with the stories that will be coming out for my time at Nashville. Spent a few days with the Nashville Sounds, had a really, really cool time. First time at the stadium in First Horizon Park, first time in Nashville in over a decade, actually in over 2 decades, and very, very, very interesting city. Had a good time and wanted to share everything that I learned. So here's a couple of those interviews. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Microbrew. We'll talk to you again later. Bye, everybody. My guest is Jacob Herdebees. He's in the Milwaukee Brewers organization, plays for the Nashville Sounds, has a very cool backstory. We're going to start, though, with the beginning, where you were born and raised, what your parents did for a living.
I was born and raised in a town just outside of Indianapolis called Zionsville. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, a homemaker, if you will.
All right.
And my dad worked. He actually just retired July 31st.
Okay,
So nice. He worked in the IT department for a pharmaceutical company based in Indy, Eli Lilly.
Oh, yeah, very well. Yes. Yeah. Oh, a little pharmaceutical company based in Indy. Okay. Well, good for him. Congrats to him. What is the strangest way someone has said your last name?
Get a lot of her to buys.
That seems fair.
What the strangest one is when they mix up the T and the B and they go Herbatees instead of her to bees.
Okay.
So that's a unique one.
A lot of vowels swinging to people, yep. I guess. I want to know about your decision to attend the U.S. Military Academy and kind of about what your obligations still are to the Army or not. Like, just can you give me the whole origin story there?
Yeah. I mean, essentially how it started was trying to get recruited to go play Division I baseball.
Sure.
So I was at a showcase in Indy, and one of the schools that was there was the school called Army.
Yeah.
And as a 16, 17-year-old kid at the time, when I got a call from a coach from Army, I was like a little bit confused because I didn't know that there was baseball in the Army.
Sure.
So I didn't know that there was a school where you could go get your undergraduate education and then also
play baseball.
So it took a little bit of time for me to, you know, research this opportunity that was put in front of me. And the more that I found out about it and had conversations with people who were already in attendance at the academy, it became a no-brainer for me that this was going to be a school that fit my personality, but also a place where once I was graduated, I was going to thrive no matter what walk my career would take me.
And correct me if I'm wrong, there was a rule change that allows people to pursue a professional sports career and not necessarily give years of their life to the Army. So what did that play into your decision at all too?
At the time, no, sure, because okay. I wasn't thinking about playing professional baseball. I was a buck 50 coming out of high school. The only tool that I had in my kit that was good was I could run. Mm-hmm. And so that's what, you know, drew me to Army was they were a small ball school. They bunted, they stole bases.
Which you are still the record holder, I believe.
Stole bases, right? And yes, runs. That's correct. And so going there, I was like, you know what? I'm going to play baseball for four more years. My dream is to play Division I baseball. I get to do it at this super prestigious academy. And then I know that I'm going to be set up with life after baseball.
Yeah.
And so in 2019 was actually when that policy changed, where you could now go and play immediately, but your service gets delayed.
It's deferred, right? Okay.
Not even deferred. It's delayed. Okay. So I still have a five-year commitment once I'm done playing professional baseball, whatever that looks like. You know, if I don't get a minor league contract for the next season, or hopefully in five seasons, you know, I'm trying to just sign these one-year deals and just continue to play, share my story, and make an impact through what I'm doing on the field instead of doing what I'm what I would be doing in the Army.
So do you have to show, like, you have to be under contract? That's kind of the cutting line.
Yep.
So, you know, is there a date where it's like, if you're not signed by this date, you gotta immediately go
it's
back?
It's a little bit ambiguous because there's a lot of different athletes in different sports.
Yeah.
So football players sign their contracts at different times than baseball players and hockey players. And we have a couple soccer players who are also playing professional soccer. So, yeah, this past year I didn't sign until February, and they said just get it to us as soon as you can.
Okay.
But every year they check in, and if you don't have that contract, it becomes a little bit tricky to continue in this program that I'm in.
That's so interesting.
And, you know, eventually when the contracts stop coming, I'm going to have to say, hey, I'm ready for what you guys have it for me in the Army.
Okay. I mean, in the way, there's a comfort level there. Like, you know what's coming next for you.
Yeah.
But also, I would just want to keep playing baseball as long as I can.
Yeah, so yeah. Swing the bat and throwing balls around for a living is pretty fun. Yeah. So.
All right, tell me about your major league debut against you were a pinch runner, right?
That
you
pinch runner against Arizona Diamondbacks. Honestly, it was a pretty good ease into professional baseball. We had a guy who hit his first triple of the season. Like, I forget the name of the guy. Mike Ford.
Okay, Mike Ford. Yeah.
Big guy, so he hit a triple off the wall. I got to pinch run at third. It was like it was two outs. I don't think I ended up scoring, but super great introduction.
To pinch run at third, I think that's a little waste of your guts. But when I guess when it's a big guy, you hit the run.
Yeah. And then how I got there was, you know, I was in the grocery store with my mom. It was Mother's Day the Sunday before, and I got a phone call from the GM saying, "Hey, we just took in so-and-so for x-rays. We need you here in Arizona as soon as you can."
Okay.
So I actually got to the game in the third or fourth inning, and welcomed by my teammates. Next thing you know, I'm in the ball game, got the start the next day.
Oh, man. And then you get your first hit off Walker Buehler, a guy who, as we record this, just carved up the Brewers the night before. But what was that moment? That had to be pretty sweet.
Yeah. So doing it in L.A., awesome ballpark, awesome scenery. I don't know that it was Shohei Ohtani bobblehead night, but one of those days that I debuted, it was bobblehead night, and it was 60,000 plus.
That's incredible.
Just getting acclimated to the new environment. You know, I wanted to get it out of the way as soon as possible, because obviously as a rookie, it's an elephant on your back.
Yeah.
You're waiting to get that first base hit. Doing it off a guy like Walker Buehler, who's obviously had a ton of success in his career, was pretty cool.
So you're maybe uniquely positioned to answer this, but you know, you think of the journey to the big leagues as, you know, getting to Major League Baseball as an endpoint. Obviously, that's not the case for everybody. I mean, you've kind of, you know, you've been up a couple times and then back here at AAA, and I know you know what's coming next, I guess. So there's some certainty down the road. But how do you look at AAA? Like, is this a holding pattern for you? Is this I don't know. Like, what would you? How do you look at the AAA experience now that you know what it's like?
For me, it's an opportunity to get better. I mean, that's how you have to look at it. Seeing the, you know, difficulty of pitching at the big league level, you know that there's tons of things to work on down here, and just getting those repetitions. And honestly, I've been in AAA for three seasons now. 2023 was my first year. The pitching then versus now. It's incredible, even in the course of the 3 years, how different it is. You know, I think gone are the days where you have these journeymen who are sticking around baseball, who are throwing 90, 91. It's like every starter now is 93 to 95 with wicked off-speed pitches. And so it's getting more and more like the big league level, in my opinion.
Okay.
You know, there's obviously, I think the consistency part of it is the biggest adjustment.
Sure.
Everybody up there in the big leagues is ridiculously good, and you might only have a couple of those arms down here, but you're still going to see the same level of stuff, maybe just not with the same consistency.
All right, last question. Did you baby reveal at Great American Ballpark, right?
I did, yeah.
Tell me about that. It's a girl.
Yes, it's a girl. It's a girl. She's born. She's 10 months old.
Oh, my gosh.
And it has just been the most amazing 10 months of my wife and I's life.
That's so cool.
Just going through this journey with her, my wife and my daughter, it's opened my eyes a lot to just the things that matter in this life.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife and I were super strong in our faith, and just having that, like, feeling that love that a God has for us, you sense that for a child now that I have my daughter. And, you know, I would just do anything for her. And coming out of the ballpark every single day and getting to hug her and kiss her, and it just makes it all worth it.
That's awesome. All right, Jacob Herdebeest with the Milwaukee Brewers and Nashville Sounds. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
My guest is Caleb Bowman. He's a pitcher in the Milwaukee Brewers organization, plays for the Nashville Sounds. Caleb, first question is an easy one. Where were you born and raised? Tell me a little about your hometown and what your parents did for a living.
Yeah, so I was born in Arlington, Texas. Only lived there until I was five. I moved to a small town called Percyville, Virginia, about an hour west of D.C.
Okay.
And my dad was he's a pastor. Actually, he's retired now, but he was a pastor, so that's what moved us to Virginia. And my mom actually ran the preschool at the church.
Oh, man.
Grew up in the church.
Church kid.
Yeah, absolutely was. And so... that's what it was. They are now both retired. Dad runs a little side gig down in Georgia, doing handyman stuff, but my sister lives there. So they are now grandparents down there.
That's really cool. The most important question is, what happened to the flow from a couple of years ago, the hair? What was the decision there?
Yeah, so the hair was in 23, it was the longest it's ever been.
Yeah.
And so the reason I grow it out is my mom is a 2-time cancer survivor. So I grow it out to donate.
Oh,
and I donate it to a company called Wigs for Kids, and it's a children with hair loss. And so... just do that. That was the second time doing it. And I'm kind of in between right now if I'm going to do it or not again. It's kind of at that mid-length where I would definitely need probably about another year of growth. But me and my wife, we're having our first son here in the next 4 or 5 weeks. So
amazing.
So my wife's wanting me to cut it, but I don't know if I want to. So.
You got to look good at the new family.
Yeah, exactly.
Man. Oh, that's tough. That's tough. Well, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Your story is so interesting with the number of places you've played with, you know, Canada, Germany, Australia. I want to know the craziest place. I've seen the pictures of you with kangaroos, so I know you've lived these experiences.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest? What's the wildest?
Craziest. I don't even know if it's crazy. Obviously, I think I'd have to say Australia is the craziest. Just how different the culture is out there. I mean, it's very, it's civilized, obviously, but you go 2 hours inland and you're in the middle of nowhere, and you don't know what you might see. It's definitely my favorite place where I lived too. I lived right on the Gold Coast of Australia, so some of the best beaches, some of the best surfing. It was just incredible. Lifestyle is just super active, exactly up my alley. So I absolutely love that. But then Germany's fun. It was, I lived in Regensburg, so Bavaria, Germany, which is very, I would say Southern Germany. So it's almost like, I would say it's like the south of the US, but it's the Southern part of Germany. Very homey, very country. But I loved it, but definitely different atmosphere out there and different way of living.
Australia.
So, yeah.
Did you go to these places because that was where the opportunities were, or you're just a traveling person, you know, to keep playing baseball? You thought, you know, we can combine both, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely both. I have always wanted to travel growing up. I love traveling. I love going on vacations, but seeing new places.
Yeah.
And once I didn't get drafted, I knew I wanted to continue playing baseball, as I was very healthy and thought I wanted to still pursue an opportunity to play baseball. So I just made a profile on a website called Baseball Jobs Overseas. And, I paid $100 to make this profile, and then teams start reaching out, and that's how I got connected with Canada. And once I got into Canada, because my goal was to get to Australia. I knew about baseball Australia. I didn't know about everywhere else. The goal was to get to Australia. Once I got to Canada, teams from Australia start reaching out, and that's what how I got to Australia, and then put together two pretty good seasons in those leagues. So that's how Germany came calling in. I'd say Germany is probably the third best league in Europe. Italy and Netherlands usually take that 1A, 1B kind of range.
Makes sense.
But I had no minor league time. I had no pro time at all. So it was kind of me just coming from college. So it was what they told me was, hey, go play a year or two over there, put up good stats, reasonable stats. You can probably get into these leagues.
Yeah.
So I think that was the end goal was I'm going to go play in Italy. I'm going to go play in Netherlands, kind of see what there and maybe get to in Asia eventually afterwards.
Sure.
But after 2 years in Germany, I talked to some teams in Italy and was going to plan on going there, but then played 3 weeks of indie ball, and that's when the Brewers called and picked me up. So.
Jared Koenig, right? Like, I don't know if he was Australia. He might have been New Zealand.
Yeah, he was in the ABL, Australia Baseball League, but New Zealand, yeah.
Okay. So you guys probably have swapped some more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who taught you to surf? Was that something you learned? Just
learned while I was out there. So okay. A bunch of Aussies, obviously, they love to surf. We get up early and go catch the waves. And they would put me to bed real quick with how good they are sure. compared to me. But it was fun. And I, like I said, it's still something I love to do. And anytime I get a chance, I'll do it. Obviously, now it's a little higher role and playing career over here. So yeah. I'll take my time until I'm done playing again to probably surf. Yeah. But it's, I love it. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Did you live with a cabinet making family or something?
Yep. So my host family, awesome family, the Wises, they ran a cabinet shop and called All About Cabinets. And I needed a job when I was out there because not making money. So I got a couple of different jobs here and there, but they said, hey, come work at our shop anytime you want. So I would go there and help load trucks, unload trucks, and go on. Sometimes it was 30 minutes away to unload these trucks. Sometimes it was 5 hours away. And I'd start at 4 or 5 in the morning and be done by usually 1 or 2 to head to the field for practice or head to the beach just for an afternoon. So
amazing. This is the philosophical last question, but just what AAA means to you, because you are so close.
Yeah.
And yet so far away, but also you're back home at least.
Yeah.
Back in the United States. So absolutely. What does this mean being here at AAA?
Definitely. Yeah. Two things. First thing is it's going to sound cliche and all, but I don't put my identity in the game of baseball. So AAA, single A, high, it doesn't really matter where I was playing. I love the game of baseball, but more importantly, I love the Lord. And I know that's he's let me use the baseball field as my ministry work, coming from obviously a dad as a pastor. So it's been awesome to see different people and how they reflect on their faith or maybe their growing faith. And I felt like I've been placed in a lot of people's lives to share the gospel. But secondly, AAA this year has been super special to me. Is me and my wife moved here about a year and a half ago. So this is home for me. So
yeah.
I'm playing at home. I live 10 minutes. Our house is 10 minutes away from the field. So getting going home every single week instead of going to a team apartment. Obviously, yeah, we still have the road trips and all. But when you get to go to your own bed, it's super special. And yeah, like I said, you're one stop away. You're one call away at any time. A couple injuries or a couple trades here and there.
Sure,
you can be up there. And even though season's been up and down this year, I'm so blessed to be here.
All right, Caleb Bowman, good luck with fatherhood. Thank you so much, sir.
Appreciate it. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right.